Welcome back, listeners, to Built to Lead, Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Today, we continue the second half of our discussion with William Jones. William Jones is the founder of a startup company headquartered in Ottawa called Lennox Medical. William brings to the space a unique blend of engineering expertise and healthcare solutions to solve oncological community-based care. In part two, we'll be discussing two articles with William. The first article discusses an innovative home care model in Toronto, and the second article discusses the value of curiosity in an organization and some challenges healthcare leaders may face. Let's get right back into the conversation. For an organization to sustain a culture of curiosity, there are three phases of growth to provide a clear roadmap. So phase one is build trust and visibility. Phase two is define a research vision and build partnership. And phase three is drive the agenda. It is important for healthcare organizations to foster curiosity. And that brings us to the articles we want to talk to you about today. As always, for our listeners, you can find the links to the PDFs of our articles in the episode description if you would like to read them for yourself. But we're going to summarize as we go. Our first article is by Dr. Sandra McKay et al. And it presents a case study of a home care organization in Toronto that successfully created and sustained a culture of curiosity through the establishment of an embedded research unit. The transformation was driven by the need for increased integration in the healthcare sector, which demanded non-research-based organizations to contribute to evidence-based decision-making as equal partners. The paper presented the roadmap used to achieve this transformation, combining Galbraith's STAR model for organizational design and use Cotter's 8-step change model. The use of Galbraith's STAR model and Cotter's 8-step change model as guiding frameworks, I think, is a commendable approach. The STAR model emphasizes the importance of organizational design, so that is strategy. This includes structure, process, rewards, and people to support a thriving research unit. Cotter's change model helps create a climate for change, so enabling and guiding the organization and sustaining the transformation over time. The 8 steps for leading change, according to Cotter, are 1, identifying the reasons for change, so that is open dialogue, discuss threats and opportunities. 2, building a guiding coalition by nominating leaders and setting and driving values, which we've talked about. 3, a strategic vision. So how will the future look like? 4, create short-term wins. How do we provide incentives and reward people? 5, removing barriers. 6, in terms of communicating for buy-in. Step 7, accelerate and consolidate. So we want to review the process to identify what still needs to improve. And the last step is make change stick. So we want to make sure these new processes become strong enough to replace old habits. The author emphasizes that community-based organizations in the healthcare sector, such as home care providers, fostering a culture of curiosity is essential to meet the expectations of an integrated care system by developing an in-house research unit. The organizations can drive improvements in clinical outcomes, patient safety, and innovative care delivery. The article highlights an organizational design and change management in fostering a culture of curiosity in healthcare. So, William, as healthcare leaders, how do we apply these frameworks, these principles, like the STAR model, like the 8-step change model, to create an environment that encourage risk-taking, curiosity-driven research in their organizations?
I think what's important is, when I think of, I'm going to think about it, healthcare, as it's very resistant to change. You know, people have tried to change and then it's like, it's not going to work. You know, Jim, like, I know that you're coming in, you're young, you're out of your MBA, you're out of university, whatever, you want to do this, but it's not going to happen. We tried that 3 times already. It didn't work. So I think what's important to recognize when I read this article is Galbraith's STAR model is the people aspect, the people pillar. It's really important to recognize that, you know, it didn't work because that's what the people were at the time, or that's what the strategy was at the time. So let's build that trust, you and me, And let's look at how we can change that for the next time we go to iterate this and create change as a leader. So I think that's what's important from a healthcare perspective and reading this article is understanding that there's a lot of baggage from historical efforts of trying to create change and improve things. So you're not going in with a fresh, clean sheet of paper to go, yeah, we got this, we got this, we got this. And so it's important to recognize, you know, even the people, maybe there are some leftover people that try to implement change, go seek them out, build their trust, understand what didn't work, and then go apply it and see how you can change the parts of the STAR model to hopefully come out with a better outcome. And I think that's really important. The other one is the phase of trust is key. And, you know, we talked about watching physicians' workflow and speaking to seeing the patient, et cetera. You know, I worked at a company where we sold products to physicians, but I still watched them wheel a patient in and then wheel a patient out and understand the whole chain of that journey for that operation. Because if they use the wrong product, that patient then has to stay in the hospital longer because of a certain complication, right? So it's really important to build trust by, you know, there's a lot of administration in the US and Canada that has been built up in hospitals, and it's really apparent. And so as a healthcare leader, you can't just be making changes on physicians or nurses or even the janitorial staff or the porter staff without going there and being on the floor and speaking to them and building that trust and seeing their workflow and understanding their pain points. So when I read this article, those are the two key things that stuck out was trust and then understanding that people have tried to change previously. So understand what was done as part of the STAR model in those and see how you can tweak for the future.
I think some key aspects that you're talking about there, William, is, again, build trust and then how do we find champions? And then, as we talked about before, just understanding the various stakeholders. And even somebody myself, I consider myself an emerging leader. Something as you talked about, we keep hearing is like healthcare is slow to change. Sometimes we feel like we're having these same conversations over and over again. More senior leaders are saying we had this discussion 10 years ago. So we know that it seems like old habits are hard to break, either professionally, personally on a level, or maybe at a macro level for the system. So for Cotter's 8 Steps for Leading Change, the framework argues to strengthen and streamline new process. That's what we need to do so we can replace some of these old habits. How have you inspired change in your team, and what tools do you use to ensure that some of these changes actually stick?
I'd say vulnerability is key. So as a leader, just being vulnerable and saying, you know, I don't know what the end solution is. I don't know if this is the right process, but I know that we can always be improving and getting better. So continuous improvement and vulnerability. And again, recognizing the time of when things make sense to iterate and not iterate. But I think those are two key principles I try to espouse as a leader. And with vulnerability, you know, this is what we've done in the past. I notice that it doesn't work all the time. It makes, you know, this person upset or this process is tougher for them. I'm open to ideas. So let's collaborate together and see what we can do to improve overall. And I think that's what's important. And, you know, I've witnessed it in healthcare from another organization. There's a virus out there called cytomegalovirus, CMV. And it's one of the most common viruses out there in the world. And we've all heard of Zika. We've all heard of COVID. But CMV is actually the leading cause of non-congenital deformities in our children in the Western world. Has anyone on this podcast heard of it? You know, maybe 5%, 10%. Right? Like, it's kind of silly how no one's really heard of it. And then in 2018, the scientists just had this idea that we already do a blood spot test on Ontario newborns for 20 different viruses, et cetera. What if we just, instead of creating a whole new process and a whole new, you know, organization to test this CMV, what if we just tested that blood prick, that same blood prick, not telling, you know, Susan to go do another blood prick, just test that same one and make it 21 things that we test. And, you know, to Cotter's model, he got that short-term win. Ontario started doing that. So we started with a pilot, then we started with rolling it out, universal screening for CMV. And Ontario is one of the first provinces to do that. And actually even in North America, there's not many states that do it, right? And, you know, over the past few years, there's been through the help of the CMV Canada organization and hospital organizations, physicians, scientists, et cetera, there's more and more states and provinces that are getting more traction on this and getting that communicating for buy-in part of Cotter's model. So I think what's really important is you can't boil the ocean, as people say. You can't go, we're going to test this across Canada, we're going to test this across the US, because then you got all these different stakeholders get on board, right? And so it's really important to find those areas where you can get some short-term wins. And so when I work with my team, it's, you know, our planning strategy process is not working for us. Where can we improve? You know, we already have a strategy, so we're going to work with that. But what can we start doing today for next year that can help improve that process? So that's sort of the kind of things that I instill in my team, is that I'm all for being a rebel. I'm all for curiosity, but there's certain times to do it and certain projects to do it. But we also have to execute. So hopefully that sort of outlines for your audience that there's opportunity out there, and these models are great to think about how you can apply in your situation.
Having worked in a startup just recently, I really resonate with that. When you said that, you know, sometimes you really have to get those small wins in order to keep motivated, in order to really acknowledge and know that you're on the right path, you're on the right trajectory. It's just a matter of time when you are fully able to put that product into market, and then see those returns, see the impact and the patient outcomes just improve because of the technology that you put out there. So I really appreciate that. I think instilling that form of value within a team becomes that much important. You know, just work on the small tasks, execute them well, get those small wins, and then we 2x it, and then we 3x it, and then we 4x it. So that point really resonated with me. So I appreciated that. Our second article is an interesting study by Spencer Harrison, an associate professor of organizational behavior at Harvard Business Review. The study sheds light on the challenges organizations face in terms of how curiosity is valued. So there was a specific study that was done, and the study surveyed 16,000 employees and over 1,500 C-suite leaders across the industry and at various levels of leadership to understand how curiosity is viewed at their organization. So now, these were some of the results. The results showed that 83% of C-level or president-level executives say curiosity is encouraged a great deal or a good amount at their company. Yet only 52% of individuals actually agreed. This suggests a gap between how executives see curiosity versus how employees see curiosity. When leaders are not presented with barriers in asking questions, they assume the same is true for their employees. However, the study suggests that this is far from reality for the employees. The research then goes on suggesting that fostering curiosity can be achieved by leveraging employees' identities and encouraging them to share their interests. Additionally, learning about someone's identity can play a role in encouraging curiosity, where support and reinforcement is available from mentors and leaders, which can enable employees to feel confident when they're asking questions or really challenging the status quo. Hence, curiosity is linked to higher engagement and idea generation in the workplace. In the article, the writer speaks about the gap in perceptions between C-suite executives and their employees. But William, I want to ask you, in the organizations that you have worked in, as well as the company that you're building, do you think these findings are true? Do they reflect, or have they reflected in your life? What do you think are some of the barriers that would lead to this disparity?
Yeah, I think it goes back to the barriers in the disparity really come down to the execution. That, you know, we have these shareholders, this quarterly earnings, you know, we have these projects that are over budget. We're a startup, we're trying to hit this grant, you know, we need to finish this. I think it just comes down to things get really tight. People have to work longer hours, and people want to say they enforce curiosity, but at the same time, it's like, we got to get stuff done. And so I think that's where that disconnect happens from my perspective and my you know, journey through healthcare and different companies. I think what's really important is to foster curiosity as a leader. Three things: carve time. So, you know, I tell my employees, you know, every Friday for at least half hour, at least a half hour, if not an hour, just spend time to think about how we can do something better, or spend time to just go learn something about the procedure or another product or a competitor. Like, just dive yourself into something that is not your 3 or 4 projects that you're working on. The second thing is our weekly meetings. So weekly meetings, you know, Sean's got to come with an article that he read, just like you guys have created 2 articles here. Read an article and just, you know, share it with the team, even if it's not related to healthcare, even if it's about photography. You know, we might all just learn something, or it might spark an idea or a conversation, and just build the team. And so that's something I would instill. And I think that's important as a leader to bridge that disparity while still not creating a net new, you know, time to meet or anything like that to talk about curiosity. It's more about finding where curiosity can fit in your existing workflows. And then another part of that weekly meeting, I know, you know, we all got tired of it, or Zoom. And it's like you go from 10 meetings on Zoom and you're all talking about what you did the past weekend, or every Monday. What'd you do last weekend? In every Monday meeting, that's what it would be, right?
Yeah.
But it's so critical, because you share interests, and, you know, maybe you don't get to everyone, but I'm going to talk to you about the hike that I went on. And, you know, we saw this bird and it was really interesting because it had this, the way the sun reflected off it, and when it was flying in the wings, it would shine a different color. And then someone working on some luminescence on part of the med device might go, hey, that's really interesting. What if we notified users that when this is operating, it would flutter like this? So you just don't know where innovation is going to come from. And those conversations are just as meaningful as, Jim, did you finish this yet? You know, like, it's just so critical. And that's how I think those 3 things are critical on my team to help bridge the we want to be curious, we want to be innovative, and hey, the employee saying we're not afforded the time or the ability to be.
No, I really love that. I love how you're showcasing your employees and carving out that time for education, reflection. So that's even something I like to do too, is like even Friday mornings, I make sure I block off my calendar and have no meetings. So whether to catch up, just reflect on the week, what needs to be done ahead, or even using it for self-development and learning. And something that you're instilling in your team as a leader, I think, is important as well. And then what you're doing in those meetings as a teach back, because we learn better once we teach. So if you learn something, you're able to teach it back, I think that reinforces it on the individual, and then somebody learns. And then, as you said, talking about your life, talking about what happens, now that inspires inspiration or innovation. So I think it all connects, and it's really cool to see how you're just showcasing your different employees' identities to contribute to that culture of curiosity.
I also kind of want to add something that resonated with me. So I think something that's very important, and I think you're able to achieve this, William, through the way you're describing it, is setting up the conditions for success. You know, you can go into any environment and feel like, you know, this is the type of work you're going to do. And so you get into your desk and then do it. But it's the condition that your leadership sets for you that actually allows you and sets you up for success. Whether it be, you know, the asking those questions, as you mentioned, like, you know, those Monday morning meetings, you know, how was your weekend? What did you do? Why did you do it? Because it's usually the why more so than the how, that really kicks everything off, right? It's, you know, why did you go hiking? Well, you know, I wanted to be one with nature. Why did you want to be one with nature? Well, I was feeling a little overwhelmed. Oh, are you feeling overwhelmed because of X, Y, and Z? Yeah, this might be it. So you're really tapping into that why of, you know, why your employees or those you work with really are feeling certain ways in order to kind of understand what the culture is going to look like and how we can actually push that dial. So setting those conditions up are very helpful, and I'm happy to hear that that's something that kind of that's very present. In the second article, we saw that embracing curiosity involves a mutual exchange. But for leaders who are accustomed to information control, it might present a lot of challenges. So from you, what recommendations or strategies would you offer to both established and emerging leaders to overcome these traditional practices of perhaps information control and embrace a culture of curiosity within their teams and organizations?
Yeah, you know, this is a tough question. The information control management, that can be tough to crack. And you know, you mentioned the power of saying why. That's so critical, because there's a book I read actually by Amanda Lang called The Power of Why. I think it came out 2011, 2012. And that sort of like was an early point on my entrepreneurship journey. She has interviewed a lot of entrepreneurs and found it very fascinating. I think that's an important question to ask in these situations is why are they caring so much about the information control, et cetera? Because there's always an underlying reason. And, you know, at big companies, it can be even tougher because you think you're all part of one big company, and you are. But at the same time, your franchise is fighting with other franchises for the president's attention. And so you have to be careful about sharing information cross franchise, even though maybe you're at the same level as someone and you want to just be collaborative and build a cool, fun environment to work. You have to remember there's reasons why their information sharing is very coded and political and needed. And so I think that's what's really important, is to ask the question why is this information so critical to maintain? So, because you'll blanket someone or a management as they're so focused on information control, et cetera. I think it's just situational. And so when you find areas that you can be less situational about it, or find departments you can share more insights with and collaborate, then I think you'll crack that nut a little more. But it can be tough. But there's reasons, and you're just not exposed to it. And it's tough when you're at a lower level, but you're at a leadership, but maybe a mid level, to see all of those, because you're not exposed to all the different activities that are going on. So I think that's what's important, is that the world's bigger than what your eyes show you, I guess, is sort of the mind. And so you ask the questions why.
Through your experience, have you found that there have been certain leadership practices that were perhaps traditional in nature, like the example that we shared, that you're changing about yourself now? And perhaps what are some of those things that you've changed in yourself as a leader to be more present with the teams that you're in now?
Yeah, there's times where you learn from bad leaders, you learn from good leaders. And there's times where you recognize in yourself that you're like, you know, why did I do that? You know, maybe that's not the right way. I'm sort of coming into this person and I shouldn't do that. Coming to be this type of leader and I shouldn't do that. And so I think what's important to know as an employee, which when you're young in your 20s, you think, you know, I have a manager, they should know everything. But managers and leaders don't know everything. And there's self-doubt involved in leadership. And so it's often just an experiment, a constant experiment, right? And so I think what's critical is it's the values. So it's the values of the people, the values of the company. And if everyone's working in the right way, where we're all working towards the same objective, we all have the same values, and then individually we have sort of similar values, you know, I think that's what's important overall in building a team that is collaborative and working towards the right direction. But it's tough, you know, at the same time, you need to know certain times and certain things, that when things are getting done, et cetera. And I'm a fan of not stress, not creating stress and not labeling it as stress, creating pressure. So as a leader, I'm not trying to stress you out. I'm just trying to create pressure, because, you know, today's day and age, stress can be seen as bad and pressure is bad, but stress is when you don't know what to do, right? When I see someone stressed, I just know that they have a lot of work and they don't know how to go about it. So I go, let's sit down and, you know, let's open up. You know, there's times where in my career, I didn't know what I was doing, and here's how I solved the problem. But you're facing this task, so how can I help? Where can I, what's the next step that you're trying to do? And so, you know, even as a founder right now, I get in that situation where I get stressed, and then I have to remember it's about pressure. It's about controlling the situation and understanding what you need to do to deliver. When you're running a 5K, it's important to know that you're having difficulty breathing at 1K. And so you put your head down and you just focus on the steps in front of you. But then you have to remember to look up at the horizon, because you still have 5K to go. And so you have to remember that that's the overall goal and that's what we're trying to do. But same time, don't forget to look down and take a few steps and go, okay, I know how to do this. You know, this is what I need to do. I need to go talk to this person or go to the library and rent these books. Go figure this out, chunk it into time-based, you know, milestone-based, mini milestones, and then go execute. And so those are the kind of things that, you know, you can see yourself falling into the leadership that you don't want to be, but then you have to like pull yourself back and see where the problems are, what everyone's values are, and let's all drive towards a common solution and leave all of our titles at the door. You know, that I think that's what's important.
Now, I hope all our listeners were taking notes because Williams was definitely sharing a lot of gems with us. And I think that even reminds me of one of my favorite quotes, pressure makes diamonds. So I think what you talk about in terms of perspective, because a lot of times we think pressure, stress is bad, but sometimes a little stress is actually good for us. As we talked about in earlier seasons with other people, you need to learn how to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because that's the only way we're going to grow. Without any other pressure, that's just like strength training. If you're staying at the same weight, you're never going to get stronger. You're going to have to go to a weight where maybe you only could push 2 or 3 reps to over time to get stronger. So I think what you're saying is important, and just understanding, as you talked about, what your values is, that will help you to continue to go forward. So on that 5K run, when you're thinking about, wait, why am I actually doing this run? You know the why of it. This is a cancer run. Maybe it's for a fundraiser. Maybe you just have a personal record that you want to set. So I think that's something that we definitely need to keep in mind. And as you talked about too, just being vulnerable and just breaking it down into small wins so we can not look. Sometimes it's too daunting when we look at the big picture, and then just breaking it down makes it a lot easier.
And you know, identity is a huge part of this. You know, identity is critical in all of this, because you forget how much the world is viewed through your paradigm. And so hearing the experience of you guys, it's exciting. It's great because I get a different perspective. And working on teams, I would work with a graphical communication, biomedical communication team, and I would love it because that we would solve problems, and I would go, I would have never thought to solve the problem this way, never in my life. And so just be open to different people, different backgrounds, different cultures, different education, etc., because you don't know what you're going to learn.
And that all comes from curiosity, just from the state of being curious. I love that. Thanks so much, William, for bringing it all together. And I love the fact that both of you brought up 5K runs. I'm a runner myself. I love kind of going on runs and stuff. And you know, I have planned a run later today. And so I'm going to be thinking about this as I go on my run. So that's fantastic. I appreciate that. Well, William, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. You know, we've talked about so many different things under this wider umbrella of curiosity, from, you know, trusting your team, trusting, you know, processes and yourself and your gut, finding champions and leveraging champions within your work. You shared some of your personal stories with us of how you found what you found and how you're getting to where you're getting to. And you talked about vulnerability, which is super important, specifically in environments where you're a rebel, you're disrupting the status quo. And altogether, it was such a joy having you on Built to Lead Season 4.
Thank you for listening today, and thank you for joining us on Built to Lead Season 4, Rebels with a Cause. Built to Lead is created and hosted by Matthew Goldburn
and co-hosted by Mubin Lalani.
Built to Lead is a companion podcast to the Vernissage Health Dialogue Series at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation at the University of Toronto.
Tell us what you thought about this week's episode. You can find us on LinkedIn at Vernissage Health and on Instagram at Vernissage Health. You'll find both of these in the episode description. Today's episode was produced by
Dheeraj Thakur,
Matthew Goldburn, with music composed by Sindhu.
A special thanks to Wendy Nelson, Senior Fellow at the Institute of Health Policy, Management, and Evaluation. Until next time.